Hey, hi, I'm Bonnie. Welcome to this podcast, Make Joy Normal, where we chat about homeschooling and family life. With my co-hosts, Elizabeth and Christina, we address your questions and topics in a way that can create more joy in our lives. Please submit any questions you have by email or voice message in the links in the show notes. If you found this episode valuable, please share it with a friend, like, or leave us a review. That's how we get the word out. Thanks for trying to make joy normal in your own life. Hello, Christina. Hello.
Hi,
to all
Bonnie.
My readers. So nice to be here. I know it's a bit hit and miss right now with podcasting, but I'm getting on my feet. I'm getting there and life is getting back. As you guys have probably noticed, like, traveling has just become a big part of the show around here. So, but we need to stay home for a while. We need to stay home. I have one more trip that I'm doing while I leave a week from today. So I'm leading a retreat in Ottawa, and then I'm going to go visit my daughter in Ottawa. So that'll be really nice because the retreat, I don't know, I find I gain as much from being a speaker at a retreat as I do actually participating in a retreat, because I don't know, it's just a beautiful thing, right? To get to know people and all of that. So when things are well at home.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a 7 month old now and he is getting into he's crawling and already making his 3.5-year-old brother upset because he takes toys.
Crawling changes everything. Oh my gosh.
Yes, it does. And there's like 5 million choking hazards now because there are two older brothers in the house with Legos everywhere. So the third child has thrown me for a loop for sure.
Yeah, like, yeah. And you're outnumbered too, right?
So the logistical challenge is so there. And I keep reminding myself, like, he's going to be one so soon. Like, he'll be 9 months at Christmas. It's going by so fast, and I don't want to not enjoy his babyhood, but there is not as much of me to go around as there used to be. So I definitely, it's a very different experience, and I find myself enjoying watching him with his brothers. Like, that's kind of like the new joy that I get to experience this time around.
And even though you're more divided, he has more input. Like, he has more stimuli. Because there's so much going on. We used to laugh when people, you know, our younger baby, 6 and 7 baby or whatever, and you'd go places and people would say, "Well, they probably don't get much attention." It's like, that's actually not my case.
Yeah, they get plenty of attention for sure. Especially, yeah. I mean, that has been a huge blessing is, he's so entertained by his big brothers, and Christian will take him in the morning because he's a very early riser, so I can get a little extra sleep. And he gets like really antsy after about 30 minutes with just Christian. He wants one of the boys to wake up so he can.
You know, I have to tell you a story. When Lydia was around that age, like 5, 6, 7, 8 months old, you know, she would sleep between Albert and I. And in the mornings, the boys would also, three older brothers, the boys like couldn't wait to see her in the morning. And so they would all climb into our bed and kind of be up kind of above our pillows, try all vying for her attention, right? And so she would look up. My listeners can't see us, but she would look up like this, like laying on her back. She would look up and she would see all their faces kind of above her head, right? You know, and when I went into hospital, you guys, you know, my listeners have heard this story. You've heard the story when I was hospitalized for a couple of weeks when Lydia was a month old, and they were doing that since she was 3 months old. She was doing that from the time she was born. You know, her brothers would gather and gaze at her and, you know, giggle at her and whatever. And when she was in hospital, she kept looking up like this, you know, 3-4 months
old,
looking at her brothers, right?
it was so sweet.
You know, and that went on for ages. It was so beautiful. It's really cool to have siblings. It's such a cool thing. Yeah. So you had texted me I don't know, a week or so ago about some sort of discussion topics that I don't really remember.
So this was actually an Instagram post that I saw. So I've seen a couple that have kind of prompted thoughts and questions for you, but this one is from Julie Bogart, who is the lady behind Brave Writer, which is like a homeschooling writing curriculum.
And right, yeah, I've heard really good things about it. Yeah.
Yeah. She, I don't know much about her curriculum, but I do like her book, Brave Learner. And I feel like I've gleaned a lot from her kind of methodology. She has a very similar approach to home education in the sense that it's very organic and she's very, you know, like really likes to follow the interests of her kids and stuff like that. I don't agree with her on everything, you know, like I don't agree with anyone on everything, but I find a lot to learn. Mm-hmm. I learn a lot from her. So she right. posted this a couple days ago, and I just thought, that is really interesting. And I would love to know what Bonnie thinks about this, because it does sound a lot like something you've said before. So she says, learning to trust our children is the most challenging part of parenting and educating. But once you take your kids seriously, once you believe they aren't scalawags out to get away with something, a magical thing happens. You build momentum for both closeness and learning. It's a leap of faith. Take it. See what happens when you partner with your child rather than resisting or resenting them.
I love that.
Yes, I thought you would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd love to know your initial response to that and what kind of your experience, and then I'll ask a follow-up question kind of more related to Catholic specific parenting. And
sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting because I know that, that I think what I've observed over the years is that the thing that gets people into kind of headbutting with their kids is this idea is that they're trying to get away with something. They're trying to pull one over on you. They're trying to avoid their schoolwork. Now, maybe they are. Maybe you found yourself backed into a corner relationally that is the situation that you're in. But it can be so different. And so what I've observed is that people often, they do their schoolwork, they do their schoolwork, they do their schoolwork, they're top down kind of getting the kids to do their schoolwork. And it's like pulling teeth. It's like yanking. It's like, it's work as opposed to rest and enjoyment and pleasure, which learning should be. And then after the schooling is done, they have to rebuild the relationship. Right. So for, you know, in our household, the schooling was the place, was one of many places of building the relationship. And so I think that that's how we have to look at it, is that I can have this beautiful moment when I'm interacting with my child where I can be building the relationship at the same time as we're doing our learning, our schoolwork, or whatever, as you're guiding them, mentoring them, working alongside them, right? And so there's such an absolute difference in those two attitudes about education to, in terms of your kids not trying to, you know, avoid learning, and for you to not go into it as though, okay, we're entering the boxing ring now, you know, and we're going to duke it out for the next hour, however long this child needs from me. And then I can, you know, rebuild a relationship or whatever, you know, and it just doesn't need to be like that. I don't know if you listened to my episode with Deborah McNamara on Nourished, her new book.
Yes. Yes, I
so
love that.
Beautiful. And so she was basically saying the same thing, that the dinner table is often the place, it's often the boxing ring. And she's saying the same thing, as you know, this, we just can take all of that out of it and just make it pleasant and relation building, and it can be the place where we practice and build relationship rather than sort of having these relationship problems and not knowing what to do about them, right? And it crops up in other areas too. So say, for example, if you were battling at the dinner table, probably you're going to be having more problems with your kids getting their schoolwork done or asking them to do chores or whatever. There's just going to be a relational fence, right, that you have to, that, you know, in a sense, you're building, right?
Right.
And you have to reach that kid over the fence every time you want to do that. Well, I feel the exact same way about school work, you know, and education and reading together and all of that, that it's a place of building relationship, not of having to duke it out and then rebuilding, right? It's just such an opportunity, you know?
Okay, so let me play devil's advocate here. Okay, so this sounds really nice. This idea of trusting your kids, that they're not trying to get away with something, that they're, you know, that you can actually work with them instead of against them. But our kids are sinners and they are not perfect. And sometimes you just have to bring down the hammer on your child because they don't know what's best for them and you do.
Yeah.
And they're not going to just go along with what you say. And so you just have to make them do it. And punish them if they don't, because they're sinful human beings. Mm-hmm. So that is a pushback I see a lot.
For sure, absolutely, and it's a reasonable question.
Yeah.
Right. It's a reasonable concern because of the environment that we live in, because of what we're used to, because of how we were parented, because of what we went through in school, all of that. Right. We have a lot of baggage about that, but we always have to take an opportunity to reflect on what would I want if somebody was trying to make me do something, my husband, my boss, my whatever, what would I want? If I was struggling with that thing or didn't want to do that thing or was feeling oppositional in that particular moment in time, what would I want from the other in order for me to cross that barrier of cooperation, you know, cross that barrier of soliciting the best from me, which that person's having a hard time doing. If somebody was tender with me, and asking me questions about, you know, what was difficult, or offering to make me a cup of tea if I was frustrated, or giving me an opportunity to rest rather than trying to force me through something that was too challenging in that moment. Tomorrow, it might not be too challenging. You know, in another circumstance, when I didn't have a headache, it might not be too challenging. What if I had slept well the night before? It might not be too challenging. But in this exact moment, it's too challenging. And so that was the whole thing that made me make sense out of attachment parenting, was that if I thought about my husband and what I would want from him, if I was feeling uncooperative or unable to do something, and if he just said to me, okay, well, I'm going to punish you. If, you know, if you don't get supper on the table by 6, you know, you're going to have to go sit in your room. And it's so ludicrous. It's so ludicrous to think that way. Or Bonnie, just write the letter. If you don't get that letter written right now, I'm going to make you write lines. You know, I mean, it's in a marriage relationship, and it, you know, the child and parent relationship is different than the marriage relationship. I understand that. But human relationships and how we respond to tenderness and empathy are the same. And so that's something that we need to really, really be aware of. And so the more we force, right, the more we punish, the more we come down upon, the more the wall of that, you know, relational fence is being built up and being reinforced, right? And so when we have opportunity, like say we're getting opposition from our child, and even if this is a new idea, I'm going to just say this to my listeners, because you know, for many of you, this is a new idea, and God bless you for exploring other ideas, because it's such a beautiful thing to accept that something's not working and something else might work better, right? And I'm so appreciative, because I get a lot of emails about this. You know, we're trying to do this and it's not working, so we're wanting to change. And I just appreciate that softness in the parents so much, that they would consider other options rather than trying to, you know, flog the dead horse, right? And you know, I'm just so grateful for people's willingness to look at that. That if this is a new idea, and I say something like that is going to sound ludicrous to some of you, that okay, if your child's giving you pushback, the very best thing that we can do is just say, this is hard for you today. You know, do you need a snuggle? Do you need to come up on my lap for a minute? You know, do you need, you know, can I get you a snack? Let's not worry about math today, okay? Because it looks like it's just not a great day for that. And it's not a, okay, fine. It's not a huff. It's not a anything. It's true empathy. This is hard for you right now. I'm not sure why, but it's okay. We don't have to know why. You know, we can just snuggle. And the gift, grace builds on grace, right? So the gift of that you give them is going to make them feel loved. It's going to make them feel heard. It's going to make them feel like they matter. And it's going to make their feelings understood. And what happens is, what we think is going to happen is, if I do that, they're going to try and get away with that tomorrow, right? Well, if you've been in that vibe, yeah, they might do that for a while. But ultimately, when somebody does that for us, our husband says, you're having a really hard time. The kids, it sounds like the kids have had a tough day. You know, do you need to go for a walk? What can I do for you? Right? Can I make you a cup of tea? Do you want me to take over dinner? What would you like? Right? When we are cared for in that way, we respond. We, in the moment, we might say, yeah, that's, you know, I mean, we might even blast our husband. No, you don't know what I've been through, blah, blah, whatever. But we're going to come back eventually and say, you know what? Thank you. Thank you. I just felt heard and I appreciate that. And, you know, maybe if you took over dinner and I just went and had a bath or something, that would be really helpful, you know, or have a cry on a shoulder, whatever it is you need to do. But we feel loved and we feel cared for it. And we don't think at 4 o'clock the next day, when our day is, you know, gone all to hell in a handbasket again, we don't think, oh, my husband's coming home soon. I'm going to just pull that again so that he offers to take dinner again. We don't do that. Right? That would be ludicrous. What we do is we try really hard to say, okay, what can I do to make this better? So he doesn't come home and I blast him, or, you know, that things are a little calmer or whatever. Cause he just cared for me so much. I want to care for him. Right. You know, I want to be receptive to the situation. Right. And so when we, you know, really what we want from our children is compliance, right? And not just blind compliance, but we want them to love us, respect us, understand what we want of them, and that we're doing whatever it is we're doing, sometimes even hard things, that we're doing it for their good and, you know, for the good of their education or whatever. And in order to have that, we have to have good relationships, right? And so it's a beautiful gift that you give your kids.
And I think this idea of trusting your child, that they're not these scalawags who are out to manipulate you into doing whatever it is they want all the time, I think that starts when they're babies. Because, and I think our culture in the West especially is very, it does not trust babies. And that we project adult concepts like manipulation, emotional manipulation, which the infant brain is not even capable of, onto babies. And I mean, I hear people even my age, I hear moms saying their babies are manipulative. Babies, like, who can't even talk? And I think, oh my gosh, this is reverberating throughout childhood into adolescence. I mean, it does not, if you can't trust your baby when they cry that they really need something and that they need you and they're not trying to manipulate you, that they're trying to communicate something, then it's going to be really hard to trust a child when they say, I'm having a really hard time. I can't do this. I need to take a break. And I'm so indebted to people like you and books, authors of books that I read when I was a first time mom, like Dr. Sears, The Baby Book, which is like an old, you know, it's a huge book. But I read that book probably cover to cover because I was a first time mom and I wanted to know all the things. And I remember one thing he says multiple times in that book is, get behind the eyes of your baby. Try to imagine, try to see the world through their eyes. Imagine what it's like for them, which is just empathy. And it's so hard, I think, for some of us who were not empathized with as children because our parents didn't know how to do that, usually through no fault of their own. They were not empathized with and they didn't know that that was a thing. That was a thing that you were supposed to do with kids. And so to have to teach yourself to empathize with your children it's a hard thing to learn as an adult. And it's something that I am still learning every day. But I have noticed the fruit of that is so powerful when you empathize versus cast judgment. And by that, I mean like label with a very adult concept something a child is doing. You know, it's so, things just go so much better. And as they get older, I imagine, like, especially when they're teenagers and there is some of that, like, I want to be in charge. I want to do, you know, I want to set my schedule. I want to do this. I want to do that. Like, there has to be a level of trust between mother and child so that you can give them that freedom without thinking they're just going to spend their entire day playing video games and not actually doing their work. Like, there's, you know, I think so often, and the other thing I was thinking is that we've been conditioned to think that school learning has to be kind of miserable in order to be real. Like, it can't actually be enjoyable because then you're not really learning.
Yeah. Because it wasn't enjoyable for me. So it's just, yeah. And it's so, it seems like such a waste of childhood, you know, for like, when you think about, for me, I mean, it was more about boredom at school. Like, it was just bored, silly, so much of the time. And not that there wasn't some good times, there was, but just the hours and hours and hours and hours over 12 years of boredom, you know, and it shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be a frustration. It shouldn't be boredom. It shouldn't be gritting your teeth and getting through it. You know, this is yeah. your childhood wasting away, right? I want to comment on this word you were using, manipulation, because I actually, you know, have found that kids manipulate when they've been controlled. You know what I mean? That's as they get older, like not little kids, but as they get older, when they had a lot of controlling from the top down happening in their life, or a lot of carrot and stick, a lot of you know, punishment and rewards and that sort of thing, that as they get old enough, they manipulate because they're trying to control you in the way that they have been, or to control the adult in the way that they have been controlled, and it's kind of they're fighting back, right? So kids who are actually manipulating,
yeah.
you know, are feeling manipulated, right? Because we're bigger, we're older, we have the power, we have the keys, we have the money, we have the whatevers. You know, that's a lot of power that we have over a child in terms of their, you know, their happiness or the things they want to do. And so if they start manipulating us, we really have to look at what we've been doing, you know, and ideally way before that, we've caught that. But if that's something that you're seeing, we need to sort of back way up and, you know, start talking about that, because if kids old enough to start manipulating you, you know, it's really old enough to have a conversation too, is, you know, this behavior is not okay, but, you know, I think that I maybe need to find some different ways too. And maybe we can work on that together. And I don't think we need to overburden the child with, you know, what we're, you know, our, you know, sort of emotional thoughts that we're having, you know, depending on the age of the child, the conversation might look different. But in order to be able to say, you know, I think that I'm not going to punish, maybe you start with something small, you know, if you don't finish your schoolwork, I'm not going to punish you. Okay. I want schoolwork to be something enjoyable. And so let's just work together on that. And, you know, sort of see where that goes, right? And spend some time building the relationship. You know, but I think that if you're seeing actual manipulation, and I mean, we're talking about children after the age of reason, if you're seeing actual manipulation, then it's something to take a look at what you or your spouse are doing that might feel like manipulation or control to the child, right?
Yeah. And a good book on that, if you want to read one, is Hold On to Your Kids by Gordon Neufeld. He talks a lot about like when there's a rift in that relationship, especially with a teenager, how to bring them back, like how to reconnect that attachment that has been severed, because it is, the first book I've ever read that said that teenage rebellion is not actually a natural part of human life. that is something that happens because of usually peer attachment and, you know, this kind of drifting away from the family or drifting away from the parental relationship. And that just blew my mind. And I can see that the truth of that in so many ways, but I think he has a lot of really good tips for how to kind of get back into a good relationship with your child if something has shifted.
Because I think they can reach a certain age where we think like, there's no going back. Right. And, I think I've told you this story before. I was sitting around with my adult daughters and they were young adults, you know, and saying, why didn't you guys rebel? What was all about? Because I know homeschool families where there's been rebellion. I know many families where there's not been rebellion. What is that all about? And they said, well, what were we going to rebel against? Like, you know, and I mean, not that we had perfect relationships, not that everything was always smooth with amongst us, you know, amongst them and myself, you know, or they went through stuff, I went through stuff and all of that, but there wasn't rebellion. And it was like, wow, okay. Yeah. That makes sense. But I think that we can even reclaim, relationships with adult children back. Like if you have a child in their 20s or even their 30s that you think, okay, you know, I really messed up. How do I get back? I think that we still have the opportunity now, you know, everybody has free will and we have to respect that person may not respond the way that you want them to respond. But the thing is, you can actually start working on the relationship to repair it. And we're as human beings, we're very open to repair, right? So, you know, a lot of good fruit can come from that.
Yeah. Well, attachment is such a deep need that we have.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's like the deepest need, you know, first of all, attachment to our creator, but then attachment to the people that he gave us to be our primary attachment people. And I feel like, you know, this is where I feel like that really, I think all the time about that verse in Matthew, I can't remember the actual reference, but where Jesus says, the leaders of the Gentiles lord their authority over their subjects, but among you, it will not be the same. You know, whoever wants to be the leader will be a servant. And I think about that with parenting all the time because, yes, I have authority given to me by God over my children, but what does that mean? And I think that is where the real question, and that I think so often people think respectful parenting, gentle parenting, whatever you want to call it, attachment-focused parenting is no authority parenting. Like the parent and the child have equal authority and there's no sense of like the parent as the leader. And that is absolutely not true.
And it's so inaccurate. It's such an inaccurate view, but I could see people thinking, well, you know, if you're walking with them, they have just as much authority as you. Well, no, that's, you know, we're the leader, we're the mentor, right?
Yeah. You have to, and they need you to be the leader. Because they will suffer if you are not. Exactly. But the leadership is not a lording over. It's not a, I'm the adult. I have the power. Therefore, I get to tell you what to do. You have to do it. And you can't complain about it. You can't have feelings about it that I don't like. You can't be upset. You have to, you know, you get what you get and you don't throw a fit. Like it's a very different mentality than that kind of authority. It's one, I mean, I think of Jesus, like how did he lead his disciples? Like, yes, he sometimes would correct them, but he was not constantly correcting them and he was not punishing them all the time. And, you know, the only time he got mad at them, truly mad at them, was when they didn't let the children come to him. And I think about that all the time too. Like Jesus had a very special place in his heart for children. And that means I have to I have serious repentance to do when I don't treat his children the way that they deserve to be treated. So.
Exactly. And you know, it kind of harkens back to the marriage relationship again, right? So our husbands we are to be subject to our husbands. Well, what does that mean? And what we've seen is disastrous things happen in marriage and culture and Christian marriage when husbands do lord over their wives, right? It's disastrous. Yeah. It's disastrous for women. It's disastrous for men, right? And so, you know, in our sort of seeking equality and what does that mean and what is true feminism and all those questions, you know, what we see is for a woman to be subject to her husband means he's leading her in conversation, in relationship, in love, in taking her needs into consideration first, right? He is to hold her up like Christ holds up the church. And so we have to look back at that model of relationship, right? To really understand what was he actually saying? What was he actually getting at, right?
And I think so often when I've heard, you know, pushback on the comparison of the marriage relationship to the parent-child relationship, because the child is not an adult and therefore they do not have reason. And therefore, like, you have to use other tactics with them because they're just never going to get it, you know, if you're reasonable enough. And I think we really, even in the Catholic world, I really think we still don't think of children as actual people. We still think they are somehow second-class citizens because they don't have full use of reason, because they're not adults, and because we were treated like that as children, somehow now we have the right to treat our children that way. And it breaks my heart because I see I think this is an area where I think the word respect gets thrown around a lot. Like, you have to respect your elders, you have to respect your parents. But we also have to respect our children. Like, it's not like the respect only goes one way, and we should expect our children to respect us even if we disrespect them all the time. I think about that. It is such a hard concept to grasp especially for people like my parents' generation. You know, the children should be seen and not heard, respecting your elders, children or not. You know, like, who you think you are, you little whippersnapper, like, don't, you know, like, that attitude is still, it's still around.
Yeah. But it's interesting because when we sort of think about interactions amongst humans, and I'm going to use adults here and then switch to kids in the example, but if we see, say somebody's being a jerk to another person, right? You know, and they're just being mean or hostile or whatever towards another person. If we, as the observers, see the person who's being maybe sort of under attack or victimized by the person being unkind or rude or mean or whatever, like, say somebody, you know, hey, what, you idiot, why'd you park your car here? You know, what were you thinking? You didn't leave me enough room to get out. Well, you know, there's an interaction happening. If the receiver is both strong, you know, like, doesn't say, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, and just sort of let this person walk all over them. If they're both strong and kind, this is an amazing thing for us to watch as human beings. So if we see somebody say, you know, sir, I'm happy to help you out here. I can just back my car up or whatever you'd like. But I would appreciate if you're not rude to me, because I don't think we're going to get anywhere that way. But I'm happy to work with you. And I apologize that this was a difficulty for you. So what would you like me to do? Right. If you could be, just say clearly to me, no name calling, whatever. We see a strong person, diffuse a situation, not being reactive to it, just responding, okay, yeah, let's, how can we deal with this? We all watch that and think, wow, that was very well handled. If it had been me, I probably would have lost it on the guy. If it had been me, I would have been just jumped in my car and driven away. I would have been so scared. If it would be me, whatever, whatever. But where we learn from that, we learn from watching somebody managing themselves really well, dealing with a person who's not managing themselves well, and we learn and we grow from that. And we all walk away kind of with a good feeling, right? Is that this is, wow, this is a, that was well handled. I can learn from that. I can, that was, wow, that person really had it together, right? And so when we see that happening with children, when we see a parent respectfully but firmly handle a situation with a child, everybody comes away from it feeling good. Like, so if a child is having a tantrum, say, and or demanding something in a store, and the parent says, "You can't have that," and drop back and ask him your stuff, and they're yelling at the kid, or they're getting mad at the kid, or they smack their hand, or whatever they do, we don't feel good about that. We also don't feel good about a parent saying, "Oh, you want that? Okay, sure. You know, you can have that," you know, and giving them whatever they want, kind of giving, letting the child rule the roost in a sense. But when we see a parent say, "You know, actually, you can't have that. There will be something that you can have, but it will have to be something healthy. So we'll choose that. And I know that's hard for you right now, but I'm going to pop you in the buggy and we're going to go down to the fruit and vegetable aisle and you can pick something from there." You know, and the child might be screaming, but when it's well handled, we all come away feeling good about that, right? About a firmly, lovingly handled situation, whether it's adults or whether it's children. And so we always have to remember that when we manage ourselves well, we don't allow somebody to walk all over us. We also don't allow somebody to, we don't allow our emotions to get out of control and get mad. When we manage ourselves well, it's such a beacon of light to the people observing, right? Not that we're doing it. It's not why we're doing it. But it is, it teaches us something. And every time I've been in circumstances where I've seen somebody handle something well, it helped me grow as a person. It's like, okay, wow, that gives me more ideas I can put in my bag for how to handle a difficult situation, right?
Yeah. And when I feel like I struggle so much with reactivity for all kinds of reasons. But when I have a moment when I'm able to actually be that calm presence and empathize, but also hold the boundary. Mm-hmm. Like, wow, that feels so good. Everyone feels better. Even if the child is disappointed, it's still better than the alternatives. And this just popped into my mind because we're talking about conflict. I saw a therapist say this on a reel. She was saying the goal of conflict in an attachment relationship is discovery, not domination. And I think so often we want domination. Yeah. We want to win. We want, whether it's in our relationship with our husband or our relationship with our kids, but really love wants to discover what is at the root of this. Why is this conflict here? What can we do to resolve this? It's a discovery kind of expedition. And if we can approach conflict like that and approach our children's behavior like that, like, why right now I have a 3-year-old who is very, you know, he's struggling in his own way with now being the middle child, not having the baby spot anymore, and not having as much of me as he would like. And he's a very high energy, very sanguine little guy. So the way that he shows me that he's upset about not getting enough attention is writing on walls. That's like his thing. He, whenever the markers or pencils or crayons are out, he either takes them all and throws them and like dumps them everywhere, or takes one and starts writing on the walls because he knows I will come and chase him if he does that and try to get him. And that's what he wants. He wants me to engage with him in a playful way.
Right.
But of course it just needs blood boil.
Didn't occur to him to say, "Hey, mommy, chase me for a minute."
Yeah, no, like, please, I'm gonna make you mad so you'll chase me, you know, because at least then you'll chase me, you know. And when I really approach those moments with the discovery mentality, like, what is he trying to tell me right now, it goes so much better than when I try to dominate and just get after him for doing that thing. No, I don't want to do, you know? And it's such a shift.
It is.
Yeah. That's such a mindset.
Deborah McNamara uses the word curiosity, to be curious. You know, so somebody's freaking out or somebody's, and that's been a great word for me to ponder. You know, somebody's behaving a particular way or somebody's overreacting about something, whether it's a child or an adult, and just kind of being curious about where that's coming from and what that's all about. And so that again, discovery, it changes your perspective. And that's something that in marriage, I think, has been really helpful. This, you know, somebody's upset or somebody's overreacting or whatever your spouse is. And you think, I wonder where that's coming from. I wonder what is driving that, rather than what the heck is your problem, right?
Yeah. My husband's so much better at that than I am. He's much better at asking questions. He's much more naturally just prone to be curious and wonder about the origin of certain behaviors and things like that. I have a much harder time with that. God bless him for being so patient and merciful with me. But it really has helped when in our conflicts, when we do approach it from that angle, like, what's going on? Not, I'm going to win, you're going to lose. Like, I think that's the model of conflict that many of us were raised with. And so it's really, really hard to get out of that. But oh my gosh, what a game changer. If you can really look at this, like, this is a person I love, not someone I'm trying to dominate. Like, that is not from God. You know, that is from that's from Satan for sure. So,
yeah. And we culturally, we just have to be sensitive to it and keep doing our part in our own families to change, you know, to change what is, right?
Yeah.
Well, did you have more on that topic or should we wrap up there?
I think we should wrap up because my baby's probably going to be there soon. So.
Okay. That's great. Thank you so much. Well, God bless you and all our listeners. This should come to fruition in the next few days. So that'll be lovely. Okay, God bless.
Bye.